Today, Chuck Swindoll extends what he calls a plea for integrity.
A righteous man walks in his integrity. How blessed are his children after him. When you walk in integrity, you leave as a legacy the model for your children to follow. Blessed are you many times if you had a father who had integrity, a mother who had guts.
Friday on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll introduced his topic by reading a colorful quote from the American journalist and war veteran Louis Adamek, who said, "There is a certain blend of courage, integrity, character, and principle, which is no satisfactory dictionary name, but has been called different things at different times in different countries. Our American name for it is guts." Today, you'll hear Chuck Swindoll point to an Old Testament favorite who embodied this kind of personal resolve. We're looking at Daniel 6 as we continue the topical series, Character Counts. Chuck's message is titled, A Plea for Integrity.
Normally, I do not struggle as much as I have this week regarding the message of this morning. My major battle has had to do with one word, one concept, which is the topic that I feel God has led me to address today. It's the subject of integrity. There seems to be a falling away, a breakdown, a compromise with integrity. First of all, let me define what I mean by integrity. It's a little bit difficult to do that. Webster tells us it means an unimpaired condition, soundness, adherence to a code of moral, artistic, or other values. That's integrity. Integrity would be completeness. You have integrity if you complete a job, even though no one is looking. You have integrity if you keep your word, even though no one checks up on you. You keep a promise. It is the absence of duplicity. It is the opposite of hypocrisy. What you say, you do. What you declare, you, with all of your power, attempt to be. Integrity also would mean financial accountability, personal reliability, private purity. One with integrity does not manipulate other people. He or she does not seek his own self-aggrandizement. Integrity even invites constructive and necessary criticism. It's sound, it's solid, it's complete. What is it not? It is not sinless perfection. A person with integrity does not live a life that's free of sin. No one does. But one with integrity quickly acknowledges, doesn't hide the wrong. There can even be integrity of workmanship, just as there is integrity of a product. Tucked away in the 6th chapter of Daniel is a wonderful story that bothered me as a little boy. Here was a good man named Daniel who wound up in a den of lions. And I wondered as a little boy, why in the world would a man, what wrong could he have done that could lead to a den of lions? Being the little boy I was extremely interested in what wrong he could have done that would lead to a den of lions. To make matters even worse, I found out when I studied the chapter that he had done what is right. In fact, it is all tied together by a story that appears before the den of lions. The king is named Darius. He's 62 years old, according to the last verse of chapter 5. Daniel is probably in his 80s. He's seen kings come and go. He's a man marked by integrity. Even though the kings have been strong and weak, vacillating and unfair, brutal and compromising, Daniel has been like a steer in a blizzard. He stood against the elements. Daniel has character. As we come into chapter 6, the two men are connected to one another because the king has seen in Daniel that kind of integrity that it took to be in his special appointment as one of the unique members of his cabinet, called here a commissioner. Listen to the first three verses. It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because, note it now, he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Look closely at the passage, will you? What a tremendous privilege. Not only was he one of the top three officers under the king over the people, but the king thought so much of his extraordinary spirit that he planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. It's a perfect place for me to pause and introduce two very real tests in life. They are at opposite ends of the spectrum. The first test is the test of adversity. Proverbs 24:10, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Adverse times would be times when you have nothing or very little. Times of loss of health, times of calamity and tragedy, times of financial bankruptcy, or nearly that. Most of us can think back to our early days of marriage and remember days of adversity. We can remember when we began to have our children, those of us who were moms and dads. We didn't wait till we had the money to have children. If people did that, this world would be childless. But we had children even though we didn't have the money, and that intensified our financial adversity. Times were hard, and what would we do? We survived. We went back to the simple issues of life: clothing, food, shelter, and a faith in God. And we withstood the test of adversity. Things were kind of simple, but they were hard. There's another test. It is the test of prosperity. The test of prosperity. When you are promoted, when you have the world by the tail, when you get the job you've dreamed for, when your business prospers, when you move into six figures or better, when you begin to realize your dreams, when things work and you click along and you enjoy the benefits on the downside of life, privacy increases, cars increase, homes increase, salary increases. Before long, you have a number of complications. You have consultants. You have people who want to be around you. You have fair weather friends. You have a number of folk who are now on your payroll, as it were. You're prospering. Thomas Carlyle, the Scottish essayist, once wrote, "Adversity is hard on a man, but for one who can stand prosperity, there are 100 who will stand adversity." Daniel has prospered. Times once were when he simply survived. That's Daniel 1. But by Daniel 6, he's an older man, and life has begun to get complicated because that is the test on integrity. J. Oswald Sanders says, "Only a very few can be elevated to a position of great responsibility without its disturbing their spiritual equilibrium." You get the perks. You get your own place. You get respect, you get privacy, you get secrecy, you get money, and mix it all together and you have the makings of madness if you don't have character. Daniel had character. Excellence marked his life. He wasn't a jealous man. The other two were jealous of him. He was a big-minded man. They were small-minded. John Gardner writes in his book, Excellence, "The society which scorns excellence in plumbing, because plumbing is a humble activity, and tolerates shoddiness in philosophy, because it is an exalted activity, will have neither good plumbing nor good philosophy. Neither its pipes nor its theories will hold water." If you think excellence and reaching the top of the pile results in having life made, you haven't been there. And you're living under a false delusion. Right away, verse 4 presents the test. The commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. That sound familiar in our day? But they could find no ground of accusation. He was morally pure. He was literarily pure. He was ethically pure. He was financially pure. They couldn't find one shred of evidence against him. It says here they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption. Why? He had integrity. This passage says he was faithful. No negligence or corruption was to be found in him. And they hated it. Proverbs 20, verses 6 and 7. "Most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man, who can find? A righteous man walks in his integrity. How blessed are his children after him." When you walk in integrity, you leave as a legacy the model for your children to follow. It's what I call the father's thumbprint. Blessed are you many times if you had a father who had integrity, a mother who had guts. I came across an interesting brief section of scripture tucked away in the book of Job, chapter 4, which I'd like to read for you. If you want to turn back to it, fine. Job 4, the first 6 verses. "Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered, 'If one ventures a word with you, will you become impatient? But who can refrain from speaking? Behold, Job, you have admonished many. You have strengthened weak hands. Your words have helped the tottering to stand, and you have strengthened feeble knees. But now it has come to you, and you are impatient. It touches you, and you are dismayed.'" Look at verse 6. "Is not your fear of God your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope?" Eliphaz doesn't understand Job's response. Maybe some of the problem rested with Eliphaz, but the point here is clear. When everything breaks loose in one's life, it has nothing to do with one's integrity, or it should have nothing to do with it. Eliphaz is saying, if you've got it, you'll evidence it. In Daniel's case, they attempted to find a false audit, some ground of accusation, some evidence of corruption. They tailed him. They spied on him. They watched him. They talked to people about him, probably invaded his privacy and checked the records and looked into his files. And there was no hanky-panky. There was no payola. There was no cover-up, no hidden dirt. There was no secret funding. There was no bank account tucked away somewhere else. He was what he said. And they wound up with a big fat zero. If that happened to you, how would you do? If the government got really, really tough and checked on your tax records, would they find that you've cheated them? If your professor had the ability to check on your exams and determine how you took those exams, would you still make the same grade? I talked to a professor just yesterday who said, my assignment in life is now becoming not just a teacher, but a policeman. A lack of integrity. Frustrated, these jealous, small-minded men, not able to find anything against him, said to one another in verse 5, oh, we shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. Now, that's where we'll find him in trouble with our king. So let's set up a plan that'll ruin him. The commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king, and they spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects, the satraps, notice they lied. Not all the commissioners agreed with this. One hadn't even been consulted. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects, the satraps, the high officials, the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction, sign the document, so that it may not be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction, and the plot thickens. And Daniel doesn't wobble. Daniel has integrity. He knew that the document was signed, verse 10. It says, when he knew it was signed, he entered his house, his roof chamber. In his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying, giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. He didn't do it for show. He didn't do it out of panic. He just consistently did it. These men came by agreement. Notice that word again. It was a conspiracy. They came by agreement, and they found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Didn't you sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man, ta-da-da-da-da-da, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I did that. Well, we found one who's bowing to another god. Throw him in the lion's den. Who is it? Daniel. Oh, not Daniel. Verse 14, as soon as the king heard the statement, he was deeply distressed, set his mind on delivering Daniel. Even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescuing him. And they held him to his word. They said, recognize, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians. You've used that expression, haven't you? That's where it comes from. It's the law of the Medes and the Persians. My dad used to say that till I thought I'd throw up. The law of the Medes and the Persians. That's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. And that's the way it was then. The king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. I thought if you did what is right, things would work out right. You never heard that from me. Oh, ultimately, eternally, yes. But sometime you will do what is right. You will make a decision that will be extremely difficult because it's based on integrity, and you're always outnumbered when you operate on the basis of integrity, and it'll backfire on you. I got a letter from a lady that allowed me to read part of it, who allowed me to read part of it to you. Among other things, she writes, I hold an undergraduate degree in microbiology and a graduate degree in medical librarianship. In my early 30s, it became clear to me that I would prefer a career in medicine. So I enrolled in a 1-year pre-med program at a local college to do coursework, prepare for the standardized exams, and apply to medical schools. I was not on the campus very long before I became aware of a pervasive demoralization among faculty and staff. The kind of thing which can only be due to very bad management. It was also abundantly plain that my classmates were extremely dishonest, falsifying laboratory records, cheating on tests, and pressuring me to do likewise. The pressure was no problem. I know how to resist pressure. But the professor in charge of the problem is a man struggling with the twin demons of a midlife crisis and a deplorable working environment. Under this intense pressure, his favorite phrase has become, "I don't want to know." I could not bring myself to add to his burdens. Given a choice between intellectual integrity and compassion, I chose compassion. Bad choice, obviously foolish. I was wrong. In the end, I had no choice but to force him to face what he had to know. Things muddled along until some were caught cheating on a take-home exam we had been instructed to work on independently. The culprits, I wasn't among them, defended themselves on the basis that they did not know that they were doing anything wrong. Now listen to the system. As part of the criteria for admission, we were expected to agree to support each other under any and all conditions. This is supposed to ensure against cutthroat competition, but it backfired. The professor went before the disciplinary board and endorsed the student's behavior, thereby compromising his own integrity and that of the institution. At that point, I felt strongly that I had been silent too long. Too late, I protested, as gently as I could, on the grounds that attempting to force the medical schools to accept 15 highly unscrupulous people had devastating implications for society, as well as for the people who do such things. I cannot consider this a trivial incident. Dishonest students become dishonest professionals. When chemistry-based professionals are dishonest, people die. There's nothing trivial about that. My words fell on deaf ears. Throughout this time, my academic performance had become inferior. I don't perform well under such conditions. So I was told that I am hopelessly incompetent and not worth knowing, to which I reported that at least I have character, and that's more important to me than grades or medical school or money. Daniel wound up in a den of lions. Yes, he was protected. Yes, he was delivered. But in that intimidating, frightening scene, he still didn't crack.
A powerful personal illustration, and certainly a compelling sign of deep character and resolve under fire. You're listening to Insight for Living, and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, A Plea for Integrity. Now, today's sermon comes from the series, Character Counts. You can access today's message in its entirety, in fact, all 12 in the series, by going to insightworld.org. Or if you're listening in the United States, give us a phone call at 1-800-772-8888. Perhaps you heard Chuck share the letter and illustration a moment ago, and you found yourself painfully identifying with this woman's dilemma. Maybe it's left you wondering whether or not God even knows about your plight. Well, we'd like to offer you a CD sermon from Chuck called Timely Reminders of God's Sovereignty. And if you've never contacted Insight for Living, we'd like to send you a free copy. Just mention you'd like to receive the free CD, Timely Reminders of God's Sovereignty. And I'll give our phone number and mailing address in just a moment, so be prepared to jot it down. And then there's something new we'd like you to own as well. It's the brand new resource called the Understanding Heaven Passport. Chuck?
A lot of people talk about the hope of heaven, but it's hard to have hope in something we know little about. Down through the ages, people have concocted fictional images of heaven. Very few of those iconic pictures accurately depict what we can expect beyond the pearly gates. But the Bible provides clarity where misguided popular opinions often cloud our vision. So, What does the Scripture reveal about heaven? For instance, who will be there? And what about infants who die prematurely? And how about the saints? How will we fill our time there throughout eternity? Those are just a few of the compelling issues addressed in the brand new resource from Insight for Living, which we call Understanding Heaven Passport. This pocket-sized, colorful reference tool will provide concise, clear-cut answers. And this is something you'll keep in your collection of resources for many years. So you need to request the Understanding Heaven Passport today from your friends at Insight for Living.
It's yours when you give a donation of any amount. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. Ask for the Understanding Heaven Passport. You can also go online to insight.org. And thanks for remembering Insight for Living is a listener-supported nonprofit ministry that relies on voluntary donations from grateful friends like you. And as you give a contribution today, be sure to request the Understanding Heaven Passport. Go to insight.org, or if you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. It's helpful when you remember to tell us where you hear this program. Thanks so much. And when you give, be sure to request the Understanding Heaven Passport. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. Chuck Swindoll's message, A Plea for Integrity, continues tomorrow on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Plea for Integrity, was copyrighted in 1987, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2013 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.